Hi everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Power Talk. And on this episode, I'm joined once again by Tom. And of course, it's that time of year again. Christmas is in the air. So we thought we'd have a little ghost story for this time of year. And just basically a little bit of Christmas talk. But without further ado, let me bring Tom in and we'll get things going. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
It's Christmas, Tom. Once again, we are here.
Yeah, exciting times, Christmas. I'm not doing much for Christmas, to be honest, but it's still a nice time of year, isn't it?
Well, it is when you're not working and you're at home doing your own thing. But apart from that, I try and stay away from all the Christmas shopping craziness. I'm a bit too old for that now, I think.
Yeah, I try and do it online, but I think I've left it too long this year, so I'm going to have to brave town centre at some point, and I'm just dreading it. And I'm just going to nip out, get all the bits I need. And because when I do my Christmas shopping, I just run out, buy the things as quickly as possible, and then run home again because I can't stand all the crowds. But yeah, I think I've left it too long for any online shopping now.
I'm with you there. I'm with you there. I just... although saying that, I used to enjoy Christmas shopping when I was younger. It was more of an event. We'd go out with my mates on a Saturday. I'd have my money in my pocket. And we'd go down the old... we had a big department store in town. And it was like three floors, huge building. And it had everything. It was like our very own Amazon. It was everything in there. You had electrical stuff. You had your records. You had clothes. You had a cafe. You had food. You had everything. And it was like back in those days before, yes, but you remember them. But before we had the shopping mall, okay, before the shopping mall came over here in the, I don't know, the mid to late 80s, I, you know, for me or anyone else, anyone that lived in a reasonably sized town or a city, it was a department store. You had your department store, and you had, obviously, called it a department store because it had all different departments. But, yeah, we had one, and it was huge. It was run by the co-op, and it had everything. It literally had everything. It's still there, but it's now an empty building, and it's been empty for the last 20 years. I'd love to go in there now. I'd love to go in there and just wander around and go, oh, I remember going there. It's a gutted building now, but I want to do it. I just want to go a bit of hauntology, a bit of nostalgia. Are there buildings like that where you live that you want to do that?
Where I live? Oh, I don't know. There's a few abandoned shopping malls around here that'd be good to go around, I suppose. They've got that kind of liminal space thing, haven't they?
Oh yeah, love
closed
all that
shopping malls.
Love all
but
that.
But even the ones that are open, like the one near me, the Metro Centre, half the shops are closed down. So even that, you walk around there and you sort of go down a corridor, and you're in a sort of almost abandoned shopping mall anyway, because half the shops are shut down.
Mm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's it feels like that anyway.
It's weird. I mean, we have got a shopping mall where we live. Mm. We went down the town. And it is, when it opened, this is the way it worked. Our high street, if you sort of Google Western Supermare High Street back in the 80s and the 70s, it was rammed. It was rammed packed.
Yeah.
With shops, everything. You could name it. It was there. And people on a Saturday or a weekend, it was busy. It was busy, busy. You could hardly walk down there. And then they said, we're going to do a shopping mall. We're going to build a shopping mall. It's going to be amazing. So they build this shopping mall next to where all the shops are. And then they think, you know, the local council think, well, it's going to bring in more trade. No, it's not. No, it's not. What is going to happen is everyone that's now in the high street is going to go into the shopping mall because they don't want to get left behind. And that's exactly what happened. Yeah. And now what we've got is a shopping mall with a few shops in it and a dead high street full of like phone shops and charity shops and pound shops. And
barbers,
that's it.
And barber shops.
Yeah, we got lots of barber shops. We must have about 8 or 9 Turkish barber shops. The thing is with those shops, and this is just an observation, They never seem busy. They never seem busy. They're always like set on around with on their phones, just looking and just like, you know, whatever. There's like six or seven of them just looking on their phones, sat on their barber chairs, not really cutting hair. No, maybe one customer. And I'm thinking, how do they make enough money to pay their wages in a week? Considering how much business rates are. I had a studio in the town and I was paying nearly £100 a week business rates. So, you know. I don't know. I'm going to get conspiratorial here. I don't know.
Yeah, there is some theories about where they get their money from.
Yeah.
You know, same with the American candy stores.
Yeah, American candy, gift
them
shops.
Propping
yeah.
up, and they said that they were all like money laundering operations.
Laundering money. And bringing over people who aren't, you know, who are taking advantage of the system, put it that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I love a good conspiracy. I really do. But I think things have gone into the realms of reality rather than conspiracy now. It's weird that they think about conspiracies, right? I mean, I'm going way off tat here, but when you think about a conspiracy, if you think like 20 years ago, right, people going, this is going to happen and blah, 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 whatever it might be. And people around you going, oh, you're just one of them tinfoil. You're bonkers. You're off your rocker, mate. You're not one of us. You know, we're normal. You're not. You're abnormal. And yet, when you zip forward now, a lot of what people are talking about has actually come true, and it's actually reality. And then when you bring it up, people are going, yeah, it's just normal, isn't it? Yeah, but do you know what I mean? It's like, it's weird. It's like you think about all those weird things that people talk about and a lot of them are just a reality. It's just come true. But yeah, I don't know. It's
you can like look back at some of the like old David Icke clips and things he's saying that back then seemed crazy. And like now just seems kind of normal. But it's the fact that he mixes it in with all this stuff about like shape-shifting lizard people. So like, you know, it's kind of like stuff that could be true mixed with stuff that like you'd hear and you think, yeah, that's nuts.
Now, I'll be honest with you, right? I've read a lot of David Icke stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And I would say a good 40% of what he talks about, I can find a commonality with, and I can kind of listen to what he's saying and go, yeah, that kind of makes sense. I understand where he's going. But when he does go off the wall sometimes and he starts to talk about, you know, lizards and stuff. And I remember the documentary that kind of tried to make a fool of him. And I remember his appearance on Wogan, and he just come out as talking, you know, about stuff, and he was sat on there and Wogan was trying to make him into a, you know, all the people laughing at him going, oh, look at him, you're bonkers, son of God, you think you're Jesus, what's the matter with you? So and that was kind of like a turning point for him, I think, and he's like, he'd given up his big career as in football and stuff, and he was out talking. But I don't really listen to a lot of his stuff now, I must admit I don't, but I did read it, you know, there was a fair wedge of stuff a few years ago that I read, and stuff, you know, some of the stuff he talks about does, you know, you think about it and at the time you're thinking, nah, sir. And then you think now and you're thinking, yeah, actually that did actually come true, that actually is real now.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I quite like David Icke's stuff. I've read like one or two of his books, and I kind of just see it almost like you've got to kind of read through and just pick and choose the bits that you find interesting and the things that sound believable. Like personally, I really like all that shape-shifting lizard people stuff. I find all that interesting. I don't know if I'm fully on board with it, but you know, I could read that stuff all day because I just find it fascinating.
Well, he's not the only one, is he? He's not the only one that talks about it, is he? Are there other people?
No, but like I just find that he goes on about so many different threads of conspiracies and all these different things going on. It's kind of, it becomes a bit kind of incomprehensible after a while, because it's just going on about so many different things and how they all link together. And I just think you've got to kind of read it and just sort of pick and choose the bits that you find interesting. And you know, you don't have to believe it all. It's just, you know, it's just an interesting view of the world, I suppose. I do find him interesting, but I take some of the things with a pinch of salt.
But that's the best way. That's the best policy, is to don't believe what one person says. Don't just listen to one person going, oh, I like them. Everything they say is true. No, don't do that. Go to everyone. Get a little bit of everyone and then get all that information. Sit down, think about it, and then come to your own conclusion and do your own research. Go and do your own research. Go and read up. And the problem today is a lot of people, they don't want to do any footwork. They don't want to do anything. They just want everyone else to tell them what to think. And you know, people get angry when their example. I had a conversation with somebody who had a newspaper in their hand, and I said, "You're still reading newspapers?" And he's like, "Yeah, I only buy it for the football." And I'm like, "Yeah, but why bother? Look up the football results on the internet." "Well, you know, I just browse through it." "Yeah, but do you not understand that paper's telling you how to think?" "Well, no, I don't really take." And he started to get really defensive, and I wasn't trying to tell him, you know, anything particular. I was just highlighting a few things, and it's almost like he started to get angry at, like, "Well, you know, how dare you? I can do what I want. Do what you want, but there are other ways. Don't just read one thing. Read lots of things. There are many sources of information, but you go to different places." But yeah, I you know, things like that. I love stuff that is out there. I love stuff that is, you know, makes you think, makes you question. And you haven't got, like you just said, you haven't got to agree with all of it. There's a lot of people out there that talk a lot of what I'm going to coin, you know, conspiracy. Although I think that word's been so used so much now that it's kind of lost its real meaning. And then I take away a little bit here and a little bit there and go, that makes me think. That makes me question. And anything that makes you question, I think, is a good thing. If it makes you think, what makes me think? That puts a little question mark in my head, you know. And then you go off on your little journey and of discovery and look for your own answers. And yeah, I think that the whole lizard thing is, I think it's fascinating. Imagine that. Imagine if we were ruled over by some sort of lizard hierarchy, and that they had the ability to shapeshift into a human-esque form. I mean, what's his name? I'm trying to think of his name from the Smashing Pumpkins. That's the lead singer from the
Billy Corgan.
He had a. I remember him telling the story once. He had when he was first getting into music, and he was, you know, it's not his early music career, but his music career. And he was at an apartment. I don't know whether he was staying there or he was visiting somebody, but he was in an apartment with someone, and they said, "Hey, do you want to see something weird?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." He said, "Yeah, but you can't tell anyone else." And he said, "This person, they changed their appearance, and it wasn't like anything human." And he said it. I mean, if you could look it up. It's a well-known story. And he said that this person that he was in this place with, this apartment, they changed, and it's like they were like, kind of. I wouldn't say they were like a lizard, but they were more reptilian. Put it that way.
I never heard that story.
Yeah, if you look him up, do Google his name and put shapeshifters. You'll find the story. It's all over the place.
Mm.
But yeah, I think that when you've got people like that, I mean, it's like anything. I love a good conspiracy. You think about the whole Hollywood stuff, and even the stuff that's going on now, and that, you know, the stuff in Hollywood, and how people are kind of initiated into this kind of dark sect, and the only reason that they get famous is because they have to sign over their soul. They have to sign over themselves to the dark side. So in return, they get all of their showered with all of the fame, and then there comes a point where if they need to be thrown under a bus, they've got to go with it, and that's the end of their career. You know?
I mean, that's a good example of the sort of thing that conspiracy theorists have been talking about for years, about how Hollywood and the music industry is running that way.
Mm.
And people have been saying, "Oh, it's just conspiracy." And then all this stuff comes out about, like, Jeffrey Epstein and P. Diddy and all the stuff that's going on there. And all of a sudden it's like, "Oh, yeah, that's common knowledge."
Yeah, the weird parties that go on. Yeah, weird parties, the people that prey on the younger people and bring people in that seem to, you know, that seem to be in some way semi-initiated into some sort of unspoken club. It just makes you wonder. It makes you think, when you're sat, anyone listening to this right now might be laughing and thinking, oh, shut up, Reeve, you're bonkers. But when you think about it, right, when you're talking about this stuff, if it is a reality, right, it is on another level. It is on another level of mental consciousness where your brain is working at a different level. You are, how can I sort of manifest this in a verbal way that people can get on board with what I'm saying? And what I think the best way that I can kind of convey this is, imagine if you're from a different planet, right? And you come to Earth and you look at all the people and you are much more advanced, okay, than all of the people on the planet. But they don't know that because you look just like them. And you're walking around in the crowd and people are treating you just like another member of the public. But you know that you are incredibly advanced in intellect and everything. And you are able to walk around with that in you. And you look at these people that are around you as you could control any of them. You have got power over all of them. And I think that when you're at that higher level of money and fame and influence, that you do, in a way, you become a little bit, even beyond a narcissist, beyond that, beyond all that, you become someone who thinks that they are, well, they are in some way, you know, more value. And, you know, I get that feeling that those echelons of what they move in, it's just, if what someone like you or I would go into it, we would have a hard time processing the if this is this reality or am I hallucinating? Is this real?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just weird. It's just, we know it goes on and people talk about it in hushed tones, but we know something that's going on, but we don't really know what's going on, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I think it's just kind of like psychopathy, I imagine. If you're talking about like the shape-shifting lizard people ruling over us, if you want to look at it as a metaphor, I think it's probably more likely that it's just the nature of power, and psychopaths just sort of thrive in a place where you have to sort of step on other people to get into positions of power. And then you're at the top and you rule over these people like a psychopath. And then other people, other psychopaths rise up in the same system. So in the end, Hollywood, politics, whatever sort of elite system you look at, just ends up being run by psychopaths.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And that's kind of like the way I kind of look at the world, is there's just a lot of psychopaths in positions of power.
Yeah.
And the world is being run like it's been run by psychopaths. And that's probably why, when people talk about people's eyes changing, that's something I've heard a lot about psychopaths, is that like they can appear nice. You know, when people talk about serial killers, they'll appear nice 1 minute, but then suddenly their eyes will change. And it won't be like they'll suddenly change to lizard eyes or something, but there's just a something in their eyes, like it'll just go blank, like it's just all the emotions drained out of them and there's just nothing there because they're, you know, this sort of emotional blank slate almost, this psychopath stare.
That's creepy.
Yeah. I think that's probably kind of what's happening in a lot of these places.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely happening in the government right now. A lot of psychopaths there. I think anything like that, any government, any ruling, in any ruling sort of faction, you do, it kind of breeds that, you say, it kind of breeds it, and it breeds that kind of like, I'm your boss. We've kind of lost that respect, where if you're in a position of power and you're governing or whatever, you have to remember that you're not the boss, the people are your boss, and at any point they choose to, they can remove you. you know, because there's a lot more people than there are you. You might have an army behind you, but you haven't got an army that's got millions of people, you know. So it's like that kind of, that's all been fuddled up and messed up. And it's the same when we talk about David Icke and lots of other people who are in that sort of movement, the conspiracy movement, where it's kind of like you take a little bit of each person that they're talking about, and you can build up a picture. And then if you go ahead a few years and look back and think, oh, what were they talking about? Was it a load of old chuff, or was it real? And a lot of it, yeah, it's come true. It's pretty sort of basic stuff to sort of, you know, just sit back and watch. But I think when you get to a certain age, you start to question things a little bit more. I think when you're younger, you don't tend to question stuff as much. I didn't. I must admit, when I was a teenager, I was like, I just want to go out and party and be with my mates and do. I don't care about anything like you know, politics or the state of the world or in the news. I don't need nothing. I just give me my pop music or whatever and my parties, and that's all I want to do. And that was my bubble. That was my world. Nothing else outside of that exists. You could have told me that, you know, that there was a comet on its way to Earth, and I would like, yeah, whatever. I've got a party this weekend. And do you remember we used to do that at school? Remember, did you used to do that at school? Somebody, your mate, sort of Jack, would come up to you and say, yeah, don't tell anyone, but I've just found out that the world's going to end at the end of the week. And you're like, what? I've found out that the world is going to end at the end of the week. There's a comet coming and it's going to kill us all. And you're like, oh, shit. And then you'll go to your mate, yeah, Jack told me that the world's ending. The world's ended. And of course, then it would all go around the school. And then like Friday would come and you'd look outside looking at the sky going, I don't see anything. And then, of course, Saturday would come and it didn't happen. And then, of course, you'd just go and do your stuff, go down the game shop or whatever. But do you do that at school? Do you ever have that at school?
I don't remember anything like that.
We used to do it at our school. maybe mine was the only school in England that did that.
Maybe, yeah. The only time I remember that was like 2000, the millennium bug, and apparently the world was going to end then.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
Anyone like school saying the world was going to end.
There was a guy, right, back then, there was a guy I worked with, and I'm not going to say he was a nerd, but he was very techie, all right? And he was kind of like the stereotypical kind of guy that he still lived at home with his mum, right? I don't think his mum and dad were together. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But I never really saw his dad. His dad was not really... If he had a dad, I didn't really see him a lot. But anyway, so he lived at home with his mum, and his mum did all his bits for him. So she still treated him like he was like 11. So she would do, you know, she would do all buy all his clothes and stuff. And he used to wear like these short sleeve white shirts. He'd wear like black trousers and like just normal standard shoes. He didn't really have like what we call after school clothes. So but when we all come home, we would change into our like our Levi's and our trainers or Adidas trainers and our, you know, our polo shirts or whatever. That was like our after school clothes. But when we would meet up with him, he would still be in his what we would class as school clothes, but they'd just be a different colour. So instead of having a white shirt, he'd have like a blue shirt on. But it was the same like design, you know. And I remember, right, he had computers. He was really into his computer gaming, and he had a load of different computer systems, you know, 8-bit computers and stuff like that. And I remember him saying to us that nearer the time, like he had a PC, and he was saying, oh yeah, you want to be careful, the millennium bug is coming. You want to make sure that all of your BIOS is ready, and you got to update, and it might not clock over. And then we're like, I don't care, mate. I really don't care. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I can't do nothing about it. But he was like, you know, he was totally into his retro stuff, but he was like proper into his PC stuff as well. And he was like telling everyone, yeah, you've got to do, and this is going to happen, and you've got to be prepared. And I think that he was, in his head, he was doing a good thing. He was doing his duty, his kind of his electronic duty, his computer duty. But I was at the age where I just didn't care. If I got up the next day and I switched a button to play a video game and it worked, it worked. If it didn't, whatever. I was that mindset. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was everywhere, though, the millennial thing, wasn't it? It was everywhere.
Yeah. Planes were going to fall out of the sky.
That's right. And yeah, that's right.
All of this stuff.
The planes would fall out of the sky, and the hospitals with all the life support machines wouldn't work. And anything that used the Windows like mainframe thing, the operating system, would not work. Crazy, absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
But anyway, so talking about bonkers, have you been keeping up with UFO Twitter recently? I have.
Yes. The drones.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You read my mind.
Yeah.
The drones.
That seems to be all the. All in the headlines at the minute, doesn't it?
Yes.
Drones over New Jersey.
And
strange lights in the sky.
We had the ones at Manchester Airport, the ball thing at Manchester Airport, apparently.
Oh, that was weird, that ball thing.
Yeah. People are saying, oh, it's just a balloon. It's just a balloon. That's all it was. But it doesn't look like a balloon to me. What do you think it was?
Yeah.
What was it? What was it, Tom? What was it?
Oh, it was an alien. Obviously, well, people are saying it might be a drone, and then I saw a picture of a Chinese drone that was like a sphere shape, but I don't know, because I've seen other videos of those drones moving around, and they don't actually fly; they just sort of roll around on the ground, and they're like little robots. So,
right.
I don't know why you would have a sphere shaped drone. It doesn't seem to make sense to me. Like, why? Surely it would need like propellers on it or something to lift it up.
So I have been reading all last week. As much as I didn't want to, I was on Twitter, X. I don't want to offend any listeners, right? Any, if you're listening and you're a fan of Twitter or X, whatever, that's fine, right? I've got no problems with that. But I just find it a cesspool of nonsense. People just hating each other. And I used to use it a reasonable amount of time, and I've stopped using it so much lately because I just think it's so many negative people on there. And I don't know why that is, but maybe there's just a lot of angry people that are around. But I do go and I do subscribe to a number of UFO people that, you know, that do reporting on stuff just like what we're talking about. And I've been going to their profiles and seeing what they have been posting and reading it up and getting as much information as possible. And I've come to the conclusion from this information that there's three, well, maybe two or three different things going on here. Firstly, you've got people that are seeing these objects that clearly are not mechanical in the sense of, if we would make them, okay, they're not seeing things that are in the sense of what we call a drone with wings and propellers and stuff. They're seeing more like lights and illuminated things that seem to be zipping around and doing stuff. So that's the first weird one. The second lot of people that are seeing things are seeing what you could say has been created by some form of technology, which are material in the sense built, made, and they're zipping around, but doesn't seem any sound. They're not making any sound. And then you've got the next category, which seem to be the most, which seem to be these drones which go from small to the size of a small car, which seem to be zooming around. But this is the kicker for me. Is they've got all their, you know, their navigation lights are on and they're flashing and blinking and stuff. And I'm thinking, if it was like, if it was like Aliens, right? If it was like, you know, Bebop the Alien, I don't know if you'd be right driving a drone and thinking, well, I just want to fit in. I just want to be like them. So I'm going to make my UFO look like a normal drone and put propellers on it and have flashing lights. I don't think it's that.
Yeah.
I think it's whatever the people are seeing, we have made either, you know, when I say we, I mean human. It's human technology, terrestrial mm-hmm. technology. And the big giveaway for me is, you know, let's be honest, right? If you've got objects invading your airspace, right, over military bases, because we have them over here, over a military base, American military bases, and we've got military bases over here that then that apparently the SAS or the you know the SBS or SAS, I can't remember, they were tasked with find out who the drones are, find out who they are. And they were tasked with fire. I don't know if they found out or not. It all went quiet. But anyway, so we've got the people, you know, they want answers, right? Now, surely we would say, look, I'm making a TV presentation. I'm warning you, whoever's flying the drone, stop it. Because it's not on and it's not good. And stop flying them, all right? And then that is the TV. And then the next one is, right, all right, I've given you your TV. Now shoot them down. Now blow them out of the sky. Right?
And yeah, that's what I'm not getting.
I'm not getting that. What's your feelings on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get why. It's either they can't shoot them down or they just don't want to. And it that's what makes me think that, like, say the ones in America, that's what makes me think it must be the American government doing it, because they haven't just shot them down. Surely they've got the technology to get them out of the air if they wanted to. And they can't be that high up that they can't shoot them with some kind of missile or something. So I don't know. One theory I've heard is that it's the American government doing it, and they're kind of doing it as a kind of I don't know, like a show of strength almost to Russia, because because Russia's doing all this threatening about like nuclear war and all this stuff. So they're sending their drones up as a kind of show of strength. Like, yeah, we've got all these defenses in the air. If you try anything, we'll be able to intercept it. But then they don't want to admit it to the civilians because it would scare everyone. So they're just letting everyone think, oh, we don't know what they are. We don't know where they've come from, but we can't do anything about it. But I honestly don't know. I mean, I've heard so many crazy things on Twitter myself about what they are. People filming planes and saying that it's not actually a plane, it's a drone that's been disguised to look like a plane, but I can't really tell the difference between what I'm looking at. Like, I can't tell that how you can tell it's a plane or a drone or what. I honestly don't know.
I've seen those pictures of people sending up, posting pictures of lights, and you're thinking, oh, what's this? And they're going, I caught it the other night. I caught it. I was over my ass. I'm posting it. Then you brighten it up, and it's just an aircraft. You brighten it up, it's just a passenger aircraft. Why are you posting that? Why are you doing that? Why would you do that? You're trying to create problems. You know, you're just going to, you don't want to put some, you know, some static in the road. It's just, what are you doing? But here's the thing, right? We got all these drones that are suddenly up in the skies buzzing around a particular area, off the coast of America, right? One of the things I thought, I've noticed other people are bringing this up now as well, is, okay, there's all these drones, all different sizes, seem to be all doing different things. They all seem to be going over residential areas, hovering, looking and carrying on. What if they're looking for something? Mm-hmm. What if they're trying to find something? What if they've been tipped off about something and they're thinking, we need to find that quickly before that it's the fan? Now, I'm only parroting something that I've read on social media, so I could be, I'm not saying this is not my idea. This is not my theory. I'm just passing it on. And I want to get your feedback. What if someone in the intelligence agencies, whether it be MI5 or MI6 or Interpol or whatever, you know, whatever intelligence there is out there, has turned around and said, guys, we have got credible evidence to say that somebody has planted a dirty bomb in a particular area, and if certain point, if certain things don't happen, they're going to detonate it. And you can imagine the amount of problems that would cause if they, you know, if they detonated a low yield nuclear dirty bomb in a size of a city, how much chaos that would cause, how much of an exodus of people who are trying to get out of the city because of what's happened. You know, they don't want to get polluted, they want to get away. And you can imagine the chaos that would cause. And what the government are doing is they're trying to detect apparently they don't need drones to do that. You can do that with a van. They've got the equipment in vans to detect the residue, the output of the device that's gonna, you know, some sort of a bomb or whatever you want to call it. So I'm thinking that if you look at this logically, right, and just look at it logically, and all of a sudden the government don't seem to want to talk about it, and they don't seem worried about it. Well, if the government aren't worried about it, then clearly it's the government. It's not aliens. It's not someone from Zeta Reticula that's come and saying, we're here now. We are showing ourselves, and we are taking the guise of your ancient flying technology. We're not coming in our spaceships. Some people have said that there's an Iranian mothership off the coast of America where all these drones are coming from. Well, if it is, then why don't we just follow the drones back and deal with the problem? Nobody seems to want to be... It's like the governments of the... Even the British government are like, yeah, don't worry about it. We're looking into it. Don't worry about it. It's like they already know. They just... Don't worry about it. Just carry on watching your TV. You'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, it could just be that they are actually really worried about it. And it is some kind of foreign power that's invading our airspace. And they just don't want to admit it because it would make them look really weak. Like, oh, it's so easy just to fly a load of drones over our country and, you know, take photographs of all our military installations and all this. And there's nothing really we can do about it. You know, maybe they don't have the technology to get rid of them, and they're just trying to keep a sense of calm by just pretending like it's all fine and, oh, it's, don't worry. We don't know where they come from, but it's nothing to worry about.
But people have been told, and I don't know how true this is, but people have been warned in residential areas, do not shoot at them. Unless you will be prosecuted. Now, I don't know how true that is. I mean, I've seen people post on X that they were, you know, they'd been warned by police. So I rang the police up and said, look, there's something over my house. It's massive. It's hovering over my house. Well, I don't want it there. Come and deal with it. And they're like, don't worry about it. And they're like, I've got a gun that I'm going to shoot at it. And they're like, don't you do that. You just don't stay in your house.
I mean, maybe they just don't want a load of people out shooting bullets up into the air because it would just be chaos. Like, maybe they're just trying to, like, you know, keep a lid on that a bit. I mean... One theory I had was that it was just, you know, maybe there was a couple of drones to begin with. And then, like, how many people around the country have their own personal drones?
Oh, yeah.
And how many of those people would have thought, oh, I tell you what would be funny. Let's just send a drone up and fly it around for a bit. You know, and it's just sort of snowballed from there. And everyone's out there with their drones just freaking people out.
But this is the way out. Okay, so maybe it is a foreign power, right? Maybe it is a foreign power. Maybe it's Russia or China or whatever, or what, some other country, right? Some other player. And they're like, oh, we know what we're going to do. We're going to send all our drones over and we're going to ship. Like, America's the biggest might on the planet when it comes to the military. What's it, $900 billion or $950 billion a year or whatever they spend on their military? They spend more than any other country on the planet, right? Mm-hmm. Their military is huge. Are you really going to do that? because I'll be honest with you, maybe not the current, you know, people that are having power over there. Maybe they are a bit weak. But I would say that someone like, for all his pluses and minuses, someone like Trump, I don't think he would be like, shoot him down. Just blow him out of the sky. I think that they're doing it because they know they can. If it is, let's say, a third party, they're doing it because they know that they can get away with it. Because the current people in power, maybe they see them as weak, you know. So yeah. I don't know. I'm still playing from the side of, I think the players that are doing this they know what they're doing. There's reasons behind what they're doing, and that the reason that they haven't taken action is because it's them all along. And they just want the people to ignore it and just go about their business and say, just ignore it. Don't worry about it. We've taken care of it. Because everyone's playing it down. Nobody seems to know. Nobody seems to want to talk about it. Even the news, they're like, yeah, we don't know. And it's like, well, you're the news. You're meant to go and find this stuff out, aren't you? Mm-hmm. You know, not just sit in front of a computer tapping stuff on Google. You're reporters. You're meant to go and find the scoop. Find the story. They don't do that anymore. They don't, you know, they're not really reporters, to be honest. They're just talking heads. They're not reporters as in what a real reporter should be. Maybe there's a few out there still, but in general, nah, not really. But anyway, so my final thoughts is I think it's all, they know what's going on and they just want people to shut up and go about their business. What do you think? Final closing words on that.
I think it's aliens.
You think it's aliens?
No, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, a lot of stuff that I've heard about alien encounters is that they have a sort of a vested interest in making sure we don't annihilate each other with nukes. So as the world's sort of gearing up for nuclear war, maybe they're sending out a load of ships to keep an eye on us, to shut things down if things get out of hand.
I think they've got the power. I do think if anything really did what I call serious escalation, I think a lot of what's going on at the moment is just saber rattling. It's just people, it's like playground talk. Like, I'm bigger than you, I'll beat you up. It's that kind of stuff. It's just saber rattling, you know, because at the end of the day, whoever pushes that button knows that as soon as they push that button, their country, their land, their history is gone as well. Immediately, it's mutually assured destruction. Whoever pushes that button is just killing themselves because they're going to get annihilated as well. So at the end of the day, a lot of saber rattling. But I do think that if there are technologies out there that are whizzing around that have been here for a lot longer than we have, I'm pretty sure that they have got the ability to go, no, 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 you're not playing that game. We're turning these off. Because there are documented cases in history where people who have worked on these silos have said that they've encountered these objects and they've lost all control. They've got no launch capabilities. Their whole system gets shut down. So they're encountering something, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, in all seriousness, I think the drones are... I reckon they're probably a foreign power doing it. And because before Russia invaded Ukraine, there was drones seen around various neighbouring countries to Russia, seen around their nuclear facilities. Strange drones suddenly came over just before they invaded. And I would suspect there's some foreign power, I don't know whether it's Russia or wherever, who are just scoping things out to see if the military is as powerful as they say they are, sort of what they would be up against if they did end up going to war, how much bluster they can actually do. And probably the government just don't want to start some international incident by sort of acknowledging it. You know, if they have to acknowledge that some foreign powers flying drones over the place, then, you know, they'd probably have to go to war with them and they don't want to do that. So they're kind of playing it down. So pretending everything's okay, but I don't know. My feeling is that it's foreign, but I don't know for sure.
Foreign, but they must be operating from within the United States, because there's no way that you could fly a drone that far across.
I don't know how far they go.
You know, it's got to be operating. It could be a submarine, I suppose. But then there goes some of them drones are massive. Huge. I mean, the ones that I saw in those videos, they're like, well, it's literally the size of a small car. I mean, some of them, apparently some of them take, but a person can sit in them. So I don't know. That's massive. That's huge. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm on the fence. I'm on the fence, but I'm also going to a little bit where I think they already know. They know, and that's why they haven't done anything. They know.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway. Yeah, so is it aliens? Unlikely. Me.
Could be.
Might be. Some of them. Maybe some of them. Maybe the ones that the people have seen that are just illuminated lights and stuff, maybe they're the ones that are looking in on what's going on with the drones, going, what's going on here then? What's this? You know, maybe.
You've got to think, right, someone watching back this podcast in like 5 years' time, and the aliens have invaded us. It was the drones were aliens all along. You're going to look foolish if that's what it turns out to be, and you're sort of saying, nah, definitely not.
Well, I don't matter, because I'll be in some sort of alien gulag.
You've got to hedge your bets.
Hedge your bets. Sit on that fence, yeah. Just in case you've got to make friends with the, with Zaphod Bebop, you know? Just in case. Anyway, so let's get on to the Christmas dinner of this episode, considering it is Christmas. We haven't talked a lot about Christmas, actually. Of course, this year I will once again be watching A Christmas Carol. I'm not sure what version I'm going to watch. I think this year I will watch the version with Patrick Stewart, if I remember rightly. I do think he did a Christmas Carol. Yeah, I think he did. Yes, he did. Christmas Carol. He did the film The Christmas Carol. I think I might watch his one. Of course, the original is the best. And the one with, what's his name, from Neighbours, the Australian guy. He did one a few years back. That was really good. That was really dark as well. But yeah, Patrick Stewart one, that's quite cool, that one. Because I watch it every year. It's always that one. What's the one film that you're attached to that you watch every year at Christmas?
Well, I've got a soft spot for watching. Do you know a TV show called Mystery Science Theater?
Yes.
Where they watch bad movies.
Yep, altogether.
And there's one
yeah,
where they watch this really awful. Yeah, there's a couple of Christmas episodes that I like watching. There's one called like Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. I really enjoy. And there's another one. I think it might just be called Santa Claus. And I usually watch them at Christmas time. I like them. And I think Home Alone's already been on. I think we've already watched that this year. Usually we watch Home Alone because that's a good Christmas movie. And there's one, I can't remember the name of it. And we always used to watch it when I was a kid. And it's about how Santa's workshop kind of gets automated. And then all the toys start falling apart. I can't remember what the name of it is. There's like a homeless kid in it who gets taken in by, gets given food by a girl in a house. Ah, oh, I can't remember the name.
Don't know what it is.
It's a good Christmas movie. I'm sure if someone's watching and they know what movie it is, but I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. But remember we had it on cassette tape when I was a kid, and we always used to watch it every year. It was a good Christmas movie.
I wonder if they'll put on The Spy Who Loved Me again this year. Do you remember you always had like a main film? Like every year you get like this one film that they put on which has never been on telly before. And you don't really get that anymore because you've got all these streaming services. So, you know, you can see it, within a few months of it being out, if not straight away. As we're back in the day, I remember that it was one Christmas. It was Star Wars, and it was on. I think it was on ITV. I can't remember ITV or BBC. I think it was ITV. It was ITV.
I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
And they had Star Wars on. And it was like, oh, Star Wars is on telly. And it was like, it was really weird watching Star Wars at home on my home, on a home TV with adverts. Like,
yeah,
they had so many adverts. It was like every sort of 10 minutes there was adverts. And yeah, just weird. Just weird.
Yeah, the whole Christmas movie thing, that was a real like, because that, what that makes me think of is being, because every Christmas we'd sort of go down to my uncle's house, like all the family would go there. He had a big house and we'd all just sit there and then there'd be a movie on and everyone would sit around and watch the movie.
And the sound would be turned down, so you can't see what anybody's saying.
Yeah, that doesn't happen anymore, does it?
No.
Just rent something on Amazon or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, there's not like a big event movie that comes on the TV. I mean, maybe it happens, but I just don't feel like it's not as big a thing
anymore.
It's not
the same. It's not, you haven't got the same, it's not got the same influence as where we would go to on Christmas Day. On Christmas Day, it was a family day, so we'd stay home. On Boxing Day, which the day after, we would go to our nan's, right? This is when I was, all my grandparents, my parents are gone now, but we would go to my grandparents, right? And all of the family would be there. And when I say all of the family, I mean all of the family. So it was like 30 people in her like two bedroom, two up, two down little house, right? And it was packed and it was like, The kitchen was full of sandwiches and home. My granddad used to make this homebrew beer. He used to make these huge, and they used to drink it. Oh, it was stank, it did. Oh, it was horrible. I think they're drinking toilet water. But yeah. It got everyone drunk. But the thing was that they would, on the kitchen table, there would be like ham sandwiches. But when I say ham sandwiches, I don't mean packet ham. I mean my gran used to buy a joint of ham and cook it.
Yeah.
And then she would slice off these great big chunks of ham and make these chunky ham sandwiches. And everything had mustard on it. Or have a bit of ham, put some mustard on it. And have a bit of cheese, put some mustard on it. Everything had mustard on it. And it was like me and my brother, we would like, oh, you can go in the kitchen, you can, have what you want. And we'd have like crisps and we'd have jelly and ice cream, we'd have ham sandwiches, corned beef sandwiches, cucumber sandwiches, and we got home, we had such a bellyache. And of course at the end of the day when we're all leaving, my nan's made all this food and she's going, it's all right, take it home with you. So you've been eating ham sandwiches, cucumber sandwiches, jelly, ice cream, crisps. And then you'd get home 4 hours later and you'd have ham sandwiches, jelly, ice cream. Because your nan's giving it all to your parents, so that's what you're having for tea. So you've had like a double helping. So I miss all that. I miss being a kid like that and not having absolutely no responsibility. And then, of course, you go in the front room and want to watch like The Spy Who Loved Me or whatever. And it's on. You can see James Bond's Lotus Esprit getting chased by the baddies, and you ain't got a clue what's happening because the sound's turned right down. Well, it's not all the way down, it's like just enough that you can't hear it, and you try and get as close to the telly as possible with its little mono speaker so that you can hear what's going on, because the front room is like the hub of all the activity, and all your parents are in there and all your relations are in there and they're all drinking and being merry and smoking, and it's like a nightclub, it is. But yeah, I mean, I was a kid, right? I was a kid of like 11 and I must have smoked 20 a day when I was up there. Yeah. Smoke in that room. But yeah, they were great days though. And yeah, that was just like a Christmas like that was great. And you don't get that anymore, I don't think, because
everyone's so like divided up, aren't they? Like, you know, it's just not the same. Like, I just feel like the world doesn't have the same sort of sense of
cohesion,
family
family values, mate.
And stuff. Yeah, it's
been destroyed. All that kind of stuff, family values, and all that kind of stuff. is just been eroded away and made people, you know, people have become with modern technology, the I see the smartphone, it's just made people so insular and disconnected. Yeah, if you want to talk to someone, I got a mate who's literally got his phone on him 24/7, right? And I was around his house a while back and he goes, do you want a coffee? I went, yeah, I'll put the cat. No, no, that's all right, mate. She's in the kitchen, isn't she? Making some food. I went, oh, all right. I'll just text her. I'm like, mate, your kitchen's like fucking two rooms away. Yeah, it's all right. I'll just text her. What are you texting her for? Oh, I've got to get up, otherwise, don't I? I'm like, Jesus. Just get up, mate. I'll do it. I'll go and tell her. You know, but it's like, I just, when he said it, I'm like, what? Am I in the Twilight Zone? You text her? Well, she's not 12 miles away, mate. So, yeah, clown world, mate. We're living in clown world. Anyway, talking about clown world, I'll get on to our ghost story.
All right.
People are like, God, shut up, Reeves. You're just talking so much. Right. Haunted objects. We're going to talk about something that I knew about, but I didn't know it. Well, I did know about it, but only in passing. I'd read about it a long time ago, and I was like, oh, that's a bit weird. But I saw a news report, an old-fashioned news report recently about it, and I thought, I'm going to look into this a bit more and learn about it. And I thought, wow, that's a bit of a classic tale, but one I think I've got a bit about. And it'll be interesting to get your opinion. So I'm going to give a bit of background and we'll both talk about it. So it's called Bubsy's Chair, or England's deadliest chair. So apparently if you sit in this chair, you die. That's it. No, game over. You sit in this chair, that's it. You're gone. You're going to end it. So we got to go all the way back to 1702. Well, a little bit earlier than that, but around 1702. So this took place in a building which was an inn, which was later renamed to Bubsy's Stoop Inn, and it's near Thirsk in North Yorkshire. So your neck of the woods, really, Tom, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit south of me, but yeah, probably about an hour away, I reckon, on a train. Yeah, it's not too far away.
So Bubsy's Stoop Chair, or Dead Man's Chair, or a Cursed Chair, or whatever you want to call it, right, was a... I'll put this in people's minds so they understand what I'm about. Imagine a rocking chair. Your grandma's in a rocking chair doing her knitting, right? One of them. It was basically in the inn, and it, for anyone that doesn't know what an inn is, it's basically like a ye olde pub, right? It's a ye olde pub, a ye olde drinking hole. In the olden days, people would go there. And the reason it's called an inn is because it's got rooms, and you can have a ye olde steak and ale pie, and a tavern of ale, and go upstairs and get shouted at by a wench or whatever. But that's what it, imagine that. So, so this chap, right, his name was, the guy's name was Thomas Bubsy, right? He was a local shifty, you know, boy about town, boy about the village. He was a bit of a rogue, bit of a crim, okay. And he was in cahoots with his father-in-law, and they lived in an old farmhouse out in the sticks, and they used to make money, but not make money if like the official way. They made money by like counterfeiting it, and they would, you know,
they were forgers,
yeah. And they did quite well out of this, right? And so old Thomas, once a week or whatever, he'd go down the inn with all his his crew, his ye olde crew, and he'd have a few taverns of ale, tankards or whatever, and he'd get a bit drunk, a bit wild, and spend a few bit of coin, and then he would stumble home. He'd walk home down the lanes back to his farmhouse where his wife and I think his wife and his father-in-law lived. One evening he was doing this and he got a bit angry on the way home. The beer made him a bit angry, And he was getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And he got it home, slammed the door, and something happened. And his father-in-law, who was his partner in crime, something was said, and old Thomas didn't like it. And he turned on him, and the father-in-law was a bit older than Thomas. And Thomas slapped him around a bit. And then he got so angry that he throttled him, and he strangled him, and killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, not good. Realised what he'd done, you know, and the authorities got wind of what had happened, and they arrested him, and it was all like, you know, a trial and everything. And they're like, no, you've done it, that's bad. And in them days, you know, it was like, you're going to hang for that. So they hung him, and he was executed. I think that was, hanged in 1702. And where he was hung was like across the gallows or whatever. No, not gallows. There's a word for it in the hanging thing. It was across the road from where the inn was. In that vicinity, you know. And he was hung. But before he was hung, in the inn, he had this chair. And that was his chair where he'd sit and rock with his pipe, drink his ale. That was his chair by the fire. And he cursed it. He said, anyone that sits in my chair after I'm gone, I curse the chair and I curse mm-hmm. you. And if you're going to sit in it, you're a goner. And then he was a goner. So that happened, right? So they allegedly he cursed the chair.
And then he apparently had one last drink in the chair before he was hung.
Oh, there you go then.
That's what I've heard.
So that was his final act. His
favourite chair.
Right, so all that happened, right? And after his death... Oh, another thing as well. At the farmhouse, for a while, his residence, where he lived when that, apparently there was a series of knocks that were heard on occasions. Mm. On the front door, three knocks, knock, 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 right? And there would be nobody at the door, but usually when these knocks were heard, within a reasonable period of time, somebody in the area would pass away. So, don't know what to make of that.
This was after he died?
After he died, before? After he died. So, the site of the hanging, where he was hung, is apparently now a roundabout. So there's cars and that go around. Anyone doesn't know what a roundabout is. It's basically a round junction. You'd come up to it. There's three different points or two different points or whatever. You wait. The traffic goes around in a circle and there's a space you go and then carry on a roundabout.
Yeah. It would have been a crossroads back.
Yeah.
At the time when he was hung, hung on the crossroads, which is across the road from this pub.
So we get into a little bit of controversial stuff here. There were a number of people that over the years, you know, sat in the chair when it was, because the chair was still, they left the chair in the inn and just left it by the fire. And they told people, don't sit in that chair. Yeah, it's got a legend with that chair. The chair's out. Don't be sitting in that. But there are a number of people like, load of old chaff. I'm going to sit in it and have a little rock. The first one, right, was in 1967. There might have been some earlier, but this is the most recent that I've picked out. In 1967, right, a couple who were on what they call a car holiday. I suppose that was the thing back then where you would get a car and just drive around and stay at different places. It was a car holiday. You're in a car and you're on holiday, I suppose. They were on this car holiday, and they stopped at the inn for a little bit of a tipple and a little bit of a chill, maybe a sandwich or some crisps or whatever. And they had a little drink and they chatted to a few people, and then it was like, oh, nice chair. I have a little sit in that. Hey, whatever. And don't sit in the chair, like, just curse chair. And they're like, no, it's all right. You're so silly. I'm on holiday. Goes out, gets in their car, by everyone, drives off, gets down the road, loses control, into a lamppost. Guy's killed instantly. Lady survives. And they're like, there you go. That's the curse. Mm-hmm. Right? So, sadly, the guy lost his life and drove into a telegraph pole, apparently. In 1970, right, there was a building labourer, right, who came to the inn for his lunch. And he had his pie or whatever and his drink. And he thought, he got talking about the chair, and he just thought it was a load of old nonsense. He just thought it was rubbish. You know, how can a chair be haunted and stuff? You're all mad. I'm going to sit in it. Right? So he sat in it to make a point. Well, he had his lunch and he left. And then they got a message a couple of hours later saying that he'd fallen off the scaffold from where he was working as a labourer, and he died.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the fall had killed him. And they're like, well, there you go. That's the chair again. It's taken him. It's gone. Disrespected it. In 1971, right, two Canadian airmen from the local base at Skipton-on-Swale. Do you know where that is?
Nope.
Skipton-on-Swale.
I'm guessing it's nearby.
Yeah, it's a nearby village. Mm-hmm. It's like an airbase there. They were Canadian airmen. They both thought it was a funny story, and they scoffed at it. And they both sat in the chair to prove a point, right? When they were in the inn having a drink. Well, they left, and on the way back to their base, they lost control of their vehicle, and they too crashed into a telegraph pole. But this time, both men died from their injuries. Right?
Mm.
Now, there is the landlord at the time in the late 70s, mid-70s, he spoke of a young lad who was a friend of the landlord, and he wanted to sit in the chair. He was always taking the mic, saying, oh, I'm going to sit in it one day. The landlord said, no, you're not going to sit in it. There's something going on with that chair, and you're not sitting in it. And of course, one day, he gets on the guy's nerves, that, look, I'm going to sit in it. I'm 18, do what I want, can vote. So he's like, do what you want. If you want to sit in it, it's up to you. I'm done. You keep asking. And he sat in it, and he's having a little rock going, wahee, and, you know, nothing's happened. A little bit, the guy leaves, see you later, goes leaves, and a little bit later, the father of the young man comes into the pub and says, listen, landlord, you were mates, can you please get that chair out of this pub inn, just lock it away. And he's like, why? He said, my son has just fallen through the roof and broke his neck. He's dead. So the landlord takes the chair and he locks it in a storeroom out the back of the pub, never to be seen again, you know, in the bar area, or whatever you want to call it, the, you know, where the fire is and stuff. Now, I got my feelings about this, right? Now, I think it was 1978. I think it was 78. I got my notes here. I'm going to quick look. Yeah, 1978, the chair was donated to the Thirsk Museum, and the people in the museum decided not to have the chair as a display item. They put it up on the roof so that people could see it, but they couldn't sit in it.
It's like hanging from the ceiling, isn't it?
I know that you've got a little bit of information about, in 2008, a ghost hunter went to the building, which has changed. It's changed purpose now. It's not really an inn anymore, is it? It's is it a takeaway or something?
It's an Indian restaurant now. The building's still there. It's just been changed inside to a restaurant.
So what happened? There was a ghost hunter that went in 2008, wasn't there, or something?
Yeah. Ghost hunter went, and I can't really tell. I was reading an article on it, and I can't really tell what they actually recorded, because the article's title is Ghost Hunter Revisits Footage from Busby Stoop Pub in Thirsk. So it sounds like they've got something on tape or on video or something, but it doesn't really go into too much detail. But it does say that at some point they heard a male voice repeating the letter T. think it's just saying T over and over again. And they reckon that was the voice of Thomas Busby.
Mm.
But it doesn't really say how they got the voice. It does say something about a clairvoyant. So whether some clairvoyant picked up the voice, but it also sounds like they have some kind of footage. But it, again, the article doesn't go into too much detail, but it sounds like even after the chair was removed, there was still something strange going on in that area.
Well, people have also reported seeing a figure near the area, what is now the roundabout. So, yeah, I mean, it's a possibility that there's still some sort of paranormal phenomenon going on there. But wasn't there another article of a woman in the 90s that happened something about a baby?
I mean, this would have been after the chair was, but chair was removed in the 70s, was 70, it?
Yeah,
like
1978.
Yeah, just there. I sort of looked through newspaper archives, just putting in the name of the pub, just seeing if there was any strange things. And there was a few strange like deaths and happenings around the area. And one was in 1992. A woman was staying at the pub with her baby. She was staying at the inn. And at one point she made a strange phone call to her relatives. And none of the articles say what the phone call was, but this made the relatives immediately call the police and send them to the pub to find this woman, because apparently she'd gone out and thrown her baby into a river that was right next, like right near the pub. She'd gone out and then she'd gone home. She'd gone back to the pub and rang her relatives, and she was arrested. Apparently the police like trawled the river looking for this baby. No body was ever found. The woman was sent to court. I think she was jailed eventually, but yeah, they never recovered any body, but that's what they think has happened. And it's just strange because she was staying at the Busby Stoop Inn. I found a few things of people like staying there. And then there was one where I think from like 1900, the year 1900, a man stayed at the inn and he was like talking to the barmaid. He seemed completely normal. And then he went out and they didn't see him again. And then a few days later, they found him hung in a barn nearby. But they just don't know why he did it, because he seemed completely normal when he was at the pub, when he was at the inn staying there. But he just went out and hung himself the next day.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So what do you think? I've got my own opinion on what I think might be going on, but what do you think might be going on with these people that have, you know, that have come to the pub, they've looked at the chair and gone, it's a lot of old poof, and then suddenly something's happened to them. What do you think? What do you think's going on there?
People die, don't they? People die randomly, and then if you've got some kind of story about a curse, then you're naturally going to attribute it to this. But I mean, I don't know. I was looking at another article that's had a bit more detail about the chair.
Mm.
Apparently the reason why he had a fight with his, Thomas Busby had a fight with his father-in-law was actually over the chair.
Okay.
According to the story I'm reading, this chair was in the pub. It was his favorite chair and no one else was allowed to sit in it.
Mm.
And then Daniel Awati, whatever his name is, the guy that he killed.
Yeah, Orty, I think his name, go by the name Orty. Orty, yeah.
Yeah, he went into the pub and he was, you know, a bit of bravado. He was like, no one tells me where to sit. And he sat in Thomas Busby's chair.
Oh.
And that's why the fight broke out and why he killed his father-in-law was because of this chair. So that adds to the whole theory of don't sit in his chair or else you'll die, because he actually killed someone because they sat in his chair. I mean, I don't know. There could be some truth to it.
So I think about this and now, of course, there was a little bit of research done on the chair, because obviously, you know, is it paranormal? Does it give off any paranormal vibes or whatever?
Mm.
And they got a furniture expert. Now, I haven't got a name. All it says is furniture expert. I need a name, really, but I'm just going to reiterate this. He checked it out. He got his magnifying glass out and stuff, and he gave it a good look over. And he noted that the spindles of the chair which, you know, the long pole bits that all go together, they'd been turned by a machine. And the way that they'd been turned was not, they couldn't do that in the early days of when allegedly the chair was meant to have been made.
Mm-hmm.
So the way it would have been done in the early days was they used what was called a pole lathe. And from my understanding, a pole lathe is something that is basically a lathe that you basically work with your foot, and it's got a rope and a weird pulley, and you push up and down on a plank, and it makes the lathe go round. So it's not mechanical, it's more of a, well, it's kind of mechanical, but it's propelled by your own physical body. You push your foot up and down on this plank, and then it makes a pulley go round, and then the lathe goes round. So it's not a constant speed. It's, you know, so you get a different way of where the spindles are made. So this device would have been made, you know, the mechanical way of doing it would have been made 138 years after Thomas Busby's death, which means mm-hmm. the chair was, well,
no way he could have sat in it.
There's no way he would have been there when mm-hmm. at the time. Now, well, maybe I could play devil's advocate here and say, well, the original chair was broken up and thrown away, so they got another chair, put it there just because they wanted to continue the story.
Yeah,
and they wanted something there, like a prop. That could have been it. But the thing is that without a name for this furniture historian and some sort of documented proof, it's just hearsay that someone looked at it. Anyone can just write anything and say, oh, yeah, he had a look and it was this. You know, without proof, it's open to speculation. You know, we don't know. But
yeah.
I'm going to say, if you look at this case, right, and you look at it for what it is, it's a great story, right? And do you know what it would make? It would make a great story to be reenacted, like a half an hour BBC, sort of one of those old BBC sort of play for the day sort of things. It'd make a great, most probably it'd been done, but it would make great, something like that. It would be great. But so it'd be great as a story, right? But when you look at it in the context of the where it is, all these people come into the pub, right? And I know the culture of drinking in the 70s was everywhere. You'd be at work and go, yeah, I'm going for my lunch now. You'd come back half cut because you've been in the pub and had 3 pints and a pasty and you're seeing double. And that was the culture. You'd go down the pub after work. You'd go down the pub on the way home. You'd have a swift half. You went to college, university. I went to college, and I was pretty much drunk all afternoon every week that I was at college, because in the break time, we'd go over the local pub and have dinner and a few drinks, and you'd go back to class, you know, a bit issed up. So I'm thinking, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, putting my 50-50 hat on, I reckon that these people who tragically lost their lives, maybe they'd had one too many. And they were, drinking and driving was a thing back then. People would drink and drive. And it was normal. It was accepted. Like, we never used to wear, believe it or not, your younger listeners, we never used to wear seatbelts in cars. Seatbelts weren't a thing until a couple of decades ago. It wasn't really a thing. You'd get in a pub, you'd have a few drinks, 4 or 5 pints, get in your car, no seatbelt, off you went. That was a thing. It was just normal. So I'm thinking, right, that these people in the cars, they got in their car, they'd had a few drinks, they got in the car, they're a bit drunk, you ain't got no seatbelts on, you zoom off down the road, you lose control, you hit a lamppost, and it's pretty much game over. Because you've got nothing stopping you moving and bashing yourself. And I'm thinking that that's more likely what happened in the cases of the car, people in cars. In the case of the labourer, the guy's a builder. He's up in the air on scaffold. He's running around. He's most probably had a couple of pints. He's feeling a bit merry, a little bit courageous. He puts his foot slightly wrong, and there's no harness or anything, and you're done. You're off that roof.
Yeah. I'm sure Libra's used to, like, have you seen those videos of Fred Dibner when he used to climb up the up the chimney?
Oh, I don't know how he did that.
Up the chimneys. He said he used to have a couple of pints before he went up there, just to give him the courage to be up a height. So it's totally believable that a labourer up on a scaffold would have had a couple of pints at the pub.
Yeah.
I mean, getting up there.
I mean, I look at those pictures of those guys building like the Empire State Building and they just got little bits of rope tied around their waist. I'm thinking, oh my God, you guys are like walking on little like iron girders that are just skipping around and running around on them. It's like I'd be up there just grabbing onto it, quivering and crying. I hate heights. I get queasy when I look over the top of a car park. I get that whole I get that little man inside of me going, go on, jump, go on. Jump. I get that in me.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
So I'm thinking it's unfortunate, it's sad accidents. The young kid at home fell through the ceiling. Well, to fall through a ceiling, you got to be in the attic in the first place. And if you put a foot wrong and you went through the middle between the joists and you fell awkwardly on your neck, yeah, I suppose you could, from that height, you could break your neck. You know, and I think that all these cases of people dying are literally cases where it's sadly a sad accident or misadventure. As for the chair,
you think a different type of spirit was at work?
Well, yeah, I was just about to say that actually. Yes, you know, sorry. Get out of my head, Tom. Just get out of my head. Stop doing that Jedi stuff. I was going to say, or there is some other external influence where it makes people drink more.
Go on, have another one.
Oh, yeah.
Have another one. You'll be all right.
And then they're going, I'll have another one. I saw, I'm driving, I don't care. And then they have an accident. So maybe it's like an evil, the chair is giving off an evil presence going, like, have another beer. It's all right.
Yeah. That sounds plausible. Because a lot of the stories I've read about these deaths were that they're in the pub, they've heard this story about the chair, no one's sitting in it. And then after a few pints, suddenly they change their mind. They got the Dutch courage and they're like, I'll sit in that chair.
Yeah.
And then they do it and then they die. So they probably are drunk when they meet their end.
Yeah.
But whether there is some influence in there that's saying, yeah, just sit in that chair. That's plausible.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know all the facts. I mean, you don't know the toxicology reports or anything like that. Did they take blood tests or anything like that? Was that a thing back then? Did they measure the amount of alcohol in their blood or to check if they were, you know, possibly over the limit or impaired in some way? I mean, you can't. I mean, to be honest with you, I, a long, 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 long time ago, I haven't really drunk drive, really. It wasn't really a thing. I don't drink and ride my scoot. But the thing is, it's like I remember back in the teenage days of, you know, my scooter riding days with my Lambrettas and stuff. I went to a scooter meeting, right? And I rode to the scooter meeting. I was originally going to get the bus, but the bus wasn't running to where I wanted to go because the scooter meeting was down the coast and it was on a coastal road. So it was all like through a forest and it was all pitch black, but I didn't want to walk because to walk, it would take in like an hour. So I thought, I'll ride my scooter and I'll have one beer and that's it. When we got to this place, right, there was a whole scooter club there. So like 40 or 50 of us, there was Lambrettas and Vespas everywhere. And they were all in the pub and everyone was buying everyone drinks. And it was like, we were all like having a bit of a knees up. It was the weekend. And I'm like, I'm just having one. They're like, you're having one? What's the matter with you? I'll just have a Coke. No, it's all right. Have a half. And I'm thinking, I'll just have half. I'll have one and then I'll have half. And I thought, I'll just have another half. It'd be all right. Put some lemonade in it or put some lime in it or whatever. Before I know it, I'd had about three or four pints. But I felt like okay. I just felt like okay. Bit jolly, but okay. Anyway, the end of the night came. Back in those days, the pubs were shut at like 11:30. And they're like, time to leave. And all on the bikes, right? And all the, you know, all these scooters are starting up. Everybody's room off we go, like, and they're all going off in their little groups. We got to drive down this road. It's like 3 miles long, through the woods. It's like a toll road, so it's like there's no lighting, only the lights from our bikes, right? And I got to admit, I going outside and hitting that fresh air, getting on my scoot, starting my bike, putting it in gear and pulling off, I felt okay. But after about 2 or 3 minutes, I'm like, oh my, I'm feeling a bit wonkier. Like I'm kind of judging, I couldn't judge the distance with the other bikes in front and stuff. And I got a bit worried. I'm like, I slowed right down. I was like doing like 20 miles an hour. And I rode home. It wasn't far home. It was only about 4 or 5 miles. It wasn't very far, but it was the walk there, you know, to get there was that I didn't want to walk. And I was kind of, it kind of scared me. It was kind of the good medicine to be scared because my judgment was completely impaired and I'd only had a few drinks. And when I got home, I parked my bike up. And from that point on, I never drank any alcohol again when I was riding my scoot because I didn't feel in control. Some people say, oh, I feel courageous. It scared me. It was a good experience for me to have to scare me into not, because I just didn't feel in control. I felt like any minute I couldn't judge the bikes in front. I couldn't judge when they were slowing down. I couldn't. It was very strange. It was very like I'd never had that experience before. And my brain was a bit all over the shop. And from that point on, I'd never, ever went near alcohol. And if I was drinking, I would get a bus or I'd walk. I'd leave my bike at home.
Mm.
So, yeah, I can understand where these people, they're in the pub, they're having a few drinks and they just jump in the car, sped off. Something happens. They're impaired, and before they can, their brain can think, what do I need to do? It's happened.
Yeah, and then I can imagine there's a lot of deaths like that happen right after someone's been in a pub, and then if there's a legend attached to some bit of, because there is actually quite a few pubs with legends very similar to this.
Yeah.
Stoop. There's do you know the Marsden Grotto up here, like quite close to where I am? Supposedly one of the most haunted pubs. Basically, there's a beach, and there's a bit of a cave that was dug out. I think it was dug out originally by a hermit who lived in there, and then it got turned into a pub eventually. And for years, this pub was
inside the cave.
Yeah, it's like inside. It's like dug into the cave of this. That's pretty cool. Beach. Yeah, and apparently it was like frequented by smugglers.
Oh yeah, okay.
And there was one particular smuggler. I can't remember the name. I'm just going off the top of my head, but apparently the smuggler, something happened to him where he got caught doing something wrong, and he was executed in a really horrible way in another cave that was right next to this pub. He was like hung up in a barrel inside this cave and just left there to die. And he had inside the pub, inside Marsden Grotto, he had a specific tankard that you always drank out of, and no one else. So this is really similar to the story.
This is like my tankard. Nobody else drinks that.
Yeah, yeah. No one else drinks from it. And then after he died, if anyone tried to drink from this tankard, they would die. And it was just left there in the pub, this story attached to it. There's another pub that's called the Dirty Bottles that's up somewhere near me. I can't remember where, but it's called that because in the window of this pub, there are some bottles that were put on a display. They were like a display that someone was putting in there in like 1725 or something like that. And apparently the landlord was putting this display up and he was cleaning the bottles and he fell down, had a heart attack and died. And then after that, if anyone touched those bottles, they would die shortly afterwards. So the bottles have just stayed in this window. And if you go and see this pub, it's just like this grime-filled window with all these like dusty, disgusting looking bottles in the window. Very similar legend attached to them. So I can imagine a lot of people die coming home from the pub drunk. Yeah. And these sort of legends rise up around it, but...
So, your final thoughts on this account then? Do you think it's more to do with the alcohol, or do you think there's some other external influence?
I don't know. I like to think of the paranormal explanation because it's a good story. I mean, it's probably more likely that people just sort of are more likely to encounter accidents after having a few down in the pub, but I like the story.
Even though I'm a little bit on the fence and saying, well, you know, maybe it is the alcohol, but there are other people that have seen stuff there, like, you know, outside where there's a roundabout now, where apparently that was where he was hung. Individuals have seen someone there, an apparition. But if you put that chair, even though we, you know, or everything we've talked about, if you'd put that chair and say, go on, sit in it then, go on, I'll be like, nah, you're all right, I'm all right. I'm all right. So yeah, I still wouldn't sit in it.
Yeah, and even if it's nothing to do with this chair in particular, these pub buildings are so old.
Oh yeah,
you know, they're so ancient.
Yes,
they've got so much history. So many people must have died in them.
Yeah. Oh god. Yeah.
They've got to have something.
You can feel it. I mean, we've got we've played a few of those kind of places in Bristol, right? And when you walk it, quite lucky to go into these buildings when there's no one in there. So we turn up for sound check or whatever and set up. And one of them is an old, it was in Bristol, the Fleece and Firkin. We played there. And we went in there, right? And there was no one in there apart from like the sound crew, a couple of other bands that were playing. And but they've left the building as it would have been in the olden days. So all the old, you know, the architecture is the same. And you can just feel the history in that building. Yeah. You can feel the past in just by looking at the walls and seeing all the chips and dings on the walls, thinking, what made that? It looks really old and ancient. And there was another place we played, and it was a... I think it was like a factory or something in the olden days, but it was converted into a music of like a bar with a, you know, a stage and stuff. And we were in there, and it was like the part that we were in, where we load in and load out, it was original. It was like it hadn't been like done up. It was like original. So all the stonework wasn't covered or anything like that. And I was thinking to myself, imagine, because the steps outside were like all kind of worn down in the middle. And I'm thinking to myself, imagine the thousands upon thousands of people that have walked up those steps. Imagine what their lives were like, and where their lives went, why they were walking up those steps. What, you know, how long ago was that for it to be worn down like that? You know, it was just, I find stuff like that fascinating, you know?
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, me too. I especially love like pubs, especially because they were kind of like all the villages. Like, if you go to a big town, it's usually the pub was like one of the first buildings there. Like all the other buildings kind of like
that was spread the hub out that,
around these pubs, because it was like
that was the hub.
You know, that's where they started brewing the beer. And, you know, that's where they made the water drinkable, basically. You know,
I think the two most important places in any village is the town hall and the pub. And because the town hall is where you have all your meetings and your get-togethers, your Christmas dinners or whatever. And the pub is where you go for celebrations and, you know, having a drink on a Sunday afternoon, having a Sunday dinner or whatnot. And I think we're losing that now. I think in the context of so many pubs are being forced to close through, you know, stupid rules and stuff like that, they can't afford to be open. I mean, there are so many pubs that I used to go in as a young man 20 years ago. In even in this town, there are so many pubs that were great places. Yeah, so I think, you know, we've lost that a little bit with pubs and stuff. It's gone. I say I was, there were great episodes, great places 20 years ago, and they're just not around anymore. And they're such great people and great community. You'd always go there and somebody would know you, or you'd know them or whatever. Or you'd meet people that you had the same interest in. I think we're losing that. And I think that the whole kind of community as a whole has been eroded, and we're all kind of like, we just sit at home now and watch Netflix.
Similar to what we were talking about at the beginning with the, you know, the Christmas, people don't sit around having a nice Christmas family get together. It's the same thing with pubs, you know. It served a similar role, I think. It was like a family away from home almost, going down a pub. It's just not like that anymore.
So anyway, Tom, so I think we've reached the end of this episode, this end of this Christmas episode. What's your Christmas plans?
Not much, to be honest. We've had a spate of flu in my house, so our Christmas plans have kind of gone out the window. So I don't know. We'll probably go down to my mother-in-law's for a nice Christmas dinner on the day. But yeah, we were hoping to go down to, like, I was going to go down to Wales and see my family, but that hasn't happened. So yeah, it's going to be a fairly quiet one, I think, for me.
Will you be nice, I think, streaming any Christmas games?
I'll be streaming something. I don't think they'll be very Christmassy, though. But just some
Christmas horror.
Probably more. Yeah, maybe. I don't know what I'll stream. Just something. I can't really think of many like Christmassy games.
Do you remember? I hate to go off on a tangent, but I just want to say that back in the olden days, you would buy a magazine with your favorite, whatever it might be, Spectrum, Commodore, whatever your favorite video game platform, and you always had a cover disc, like a cassette or a cover cassette, I suppose, and it would have shareware on it, Christmas games, and basically they were just basically reskinned versions of other free demo games, but with Christmas like Santa Claus and stuff. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Amiga was a good one for that. I remember the Amiga discs you'd get, and you'd have like a Christmas thing, and it was just the same character with a Christmas hat on or something like
that. That's right. And they would push it out as like something new, and you think, hang on a minute, these games are... hang on a minute, this is the same game I had last month, but it's just bloody changed the costume.
Yeah.
I remember that. Classic. Good old days. Anyway, okay, well, I just want to, on a final note, I just want to wish everyone, from myself and Tom, wish everyone a very happy Christmas, or happy holidays, or whatever you want to call it. And I hope you all have a fun new year. Thanks very much for listening, and thanks very much for all your support over the last 12 months. Next year is going to be onwards and upwards. I think got a few ideas of doing a few other things, and hopefully I can get some live streams under my belt as well. But that's still on the drawing board as to how I'm going to go about that. And that's about it. So until the next episode, if I don't speak to you before, I hope you all have a very nice time off and a very nice Christmas with your family. And until the next episode, talk to you soon.